We are going to welcome on to the airwaves Bob Dobbs, author of Fata Communion, the man that inspired the Church of Subgenius, and somebody that has taken the work of McLuhan and Finnegan's Wake to amazing heights, things that are just absolutely mind-blowing. Hey, Bob, are you still there?
Yes, Evan.
Oh, I'm so glad. thank you so much for joining us again, as always, because it's always, no matter what, Bob, I can talk to you 27,000 times. I think I've talked to you 26,999. And you always just blow my mind with how your perspective through the extensions of media just keep twisting, not twisting, but just keep bringing the layers of the onion down to a different perspective. And so thank you.
I had experience with the MUFON once.
Tell me.
Some director came to Manhattan here in New York City, and I took him to the Museum of Modern Art and walked him through the collection. And he would say, "What's that painting over there?" And I said, "That's a Picasso." And he says, "Well, there's that one over there. What's that?" I said, "That's a Matisse." And then he said, "Oh, I recognize that one. That cartoon over there. That's a Ruault." I said, "No, sir. That's a mirror."
And so, yes. Now,
that's my comment on MUFON.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand that. Everybody certainly has, you know, has their opinions about what other folks are doing. But you know what? Everybody is just trying, Bob. Everybody is just trying. You're trying to communicate. They're trying to communicate.
No, I'm not trying to communicate.
You're not. Yes, you are.
No. See, that's the problem. Everybody's addicted to communication. You know, Baudrillard's syndrome of the ecstasy of communication. That's what leads to the nihilism, the nothingness, which is actually saving us. This is the interesting paradox, is that the nothingness of communication that's happening, the instability of it, like these pictures of these UFOs that come and go,
yes,
it all cancels into the black hole of constant perception of tactility, which is the interplay of nothing. That nothing means that no agenda can get any stability or foundation. That's going to save us from whatever's coming up from the Bush administration.
Yeah, but at the very same time, if you do not need consensus on an action, which means that you need to communicate and get it, you can just absolutely shove it through because people don't have the attention span or the sustainability of resistance.
That's right, and that's what's being done. Everything that is important today is done off the grid.
Yes.
And it cannot be communicated to us.
Yes.
And if you understand that, then you can maybe tune in somehow. Use your Paleolithic instinct and realize that in the end you've got to communicate it back to the collective consensus, and that will just sit there and wait for you to attempt it and will cancel you out. So we're never going to get past the nothing, the cancellation that Arthur Coker, who we had on last year, talks about.
But when did we cross that bridge into nihilism?
In the telegraph era. I mean, that's when the philosophy of nihilism came up, and then you had Hegel's negation of negation. There's a whole book on the whole concept of nil, or the void, in the 19th century. It's the beginning of existentialism. Now, it's interesting to bring up the telegraph, because what happened in the 19th century, which was responding to the first electric environment, which was an extension of tactility, or the nothing, was that the great chain of being, which was the image of nature from the 18th century, was changed by the tactile telegraph environment, where scientists discovered the missing link. It's called Darwinism. There was a gap in the chain of being, all right?
And it's still a gap.
Right. At the same time, Claude Bernard, a French scientist, discovered internal medicine. He went into what was called the interior passage. He recognized there was an interval between the inner landscape and the outer landscape. And then at the same time, Edgar Allan Poe found another way to use the interval, and he created the detective story, where you leave out the chain of evidence, the great chain of evidence. And so the reader experiences the crime backwards, in reverse, because the author, Poe, left out the connecting links. So you've got the gap in fiction, you've got the gap in evolution theory, you've got the gap in medicine, and then you have Lewis Carroll, who writes Alice in Wonderland, where the little girl goes down the hole, the black hole, the gap there, and all of that is an extension or expression and a response to the gap of electricity that the telegraph is. And we'll eventually get up to the point where I'll explain where creationism is a product of our time.
On the line's Bob Dobbs. We just have to do a very quick station ID. He's been waiting patiently to talk to you all, and so we're going to do that very quickly. The author of Fata Communion, the man that inspired the Church of the Subgenius, who they still are fighting over, I guess, the copyright on Bob Dobbs, Jr. Or Bob Dobbs. It's just really J.R. Bob Dobbs. That's who it is. It's just really a fascinating kind of interplay here, and so much more. And so, hey, this is KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in beautiful Santa Barbara. We'll be back right after this short break with Bob Dobbs.
Radio Alchemy.
Eclipsing conventional wisdom. All alchemists converge at www.radioalchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
All right, darlings, and you know to go to kpfk.org to see all the event listings that are going on, to see the plethora of shows. I mean, we don't sit there and have five different hosts that take up all the airtime on this radio station. We have over 70 programmers here at KPFK. It is a smorgasbord of thought and passion here. And so go to kpfk.org, find Roy of Hollywood's program guide, and Radio Alchemy is there, you know, Wednesday night, Thursday morning, political night. On the line, Bob Dobbs. All right, darling. So the gap, and in that gap, so okay, at that time, what is it then about the physiology of the body that on the external, within the global consciousness, there is some discoveries, but that there is something left out. What do you think they are operating off of? What juice pushes people like Claude Bernard and Edgar Allan Poe to fill that? Is this a download from somewhere? Where do they originate these ideas?
It comes from the effect of the communication environment on their sensory life. I should ask you, we've talked about, I've been on your show since 2000. We met in 99.
Yeah.
You know the phrase, the medium is a message. I want to ask you, what does the word medium conjure up for you? What do you think I mean when I say the medium?
A bridge.
A bridge?
Yeah.
Why a bridge?
Because it's a conduit. That content comes across a medium. It is a divider. It's a bridge. A conduit of information.
Okay, if you take the idea of the bridge, what does the bridge do? It's an example of the resonant interval or the gap, because the bridge touches both sides,
right,
and transforms both sides, because what it transports from one side to another alters the two sides.
Yes.
So you actually picked the right word, but let's look at what I think the word medium means.
Okay.
The medium is the past. The environment that's already been built before you put a new technology of communication into the scene. Most people think the new gadget, say YouTube, is the new medium. No, the medium is all the industrial and services that are required to keep YouTube going, and how they react to the older services of earlier media. So the medium is the past. To keep it simple.
But is the medium then, and when you say the past, you are talking about the physical machinations, the industrial
machinations. The accumulation of technologies, yes.
Okay, all right.
And so the bridge between the past and the present being created by YouTube, is the gap in the interval in the interface where metamorphosis happens. And usually identity crisis, collective and personal, because you've got to adapt your, you represent the accumulated effect of the past medium, and you've got to adjust that to the services and structures that are going to be involved in maintaining the new figure or a new environment.
Would you say that these the new environments have to do with a new extension of our body, or is it just an upgrade?
Oh, no, it adds to our body.
It
affects the body, displaces the body, changes its sensory ratios. And we've got to the point now where we've got several bodies, and I've talked about this many times on your show, but the important point I'm making to you is that when McLuhan said the medium is the message, no one thought and understood that the word medium referred to the past. The past is always what we project on things. We walk backwards into the future. It's called the rearview mirror.
Right.
So we always try to go from the unfamiliar back to the familiar.
Oh, interesting.
And that's a natural human instinct. That's an archetype of the way the mind works.
That's what, like, you know, these pundits, these right-wing pundits who are saying, we need to go back to our traditional values, family values.
Well, the non-right-wing, they want to go back to the socialist values.
Yeah, very true.
Everybody is retrieving their valuations. Now, I want to read you a quote in light of this. It says, quote, "Necessarily, therefore, all artistic imitation first arose from the pagan liturgies or mysteries. If Daedalus was the first to note this relation, James Joyce was the first to see in these ancient rituals of descent and return the perfect externalization in drama and gesture of the stages of human apprehension. So that Joyce not only was the first to reveal the link between the stages of apprehension and the creative process, he was the first to understand how the drama of cognition itself was the key archetype of all human ritual, myth, and legend. And thus he was able to incorporate at every point in his work the body of the past in immediate relation to the slightest current of perception." So when we talk about the stages of apprehension or the drama of cognition, think of it as the interplay of your sensory life. And when we have extensions of our senses being developed over the last 2,000 years, and now those extensions have taken on a life of their own and invaded us, excavated us, marginalized us, that is the medium. And that's the panic.
And so now how... that's the medium. Now, when you had talked about, now relate that to your term, the android meme. Are you saying that that composes the android meme that is invading us, and that it is alive? Is it, and it is conscious?
The interesting thing is, in our drama of cognition, we take in the world, we change it through our individual perceptual structure, and then reconnect it to the outer world. But there must be a resonance, an empathy, a similitude or similarity between the external world and our inner world, or we couldn't even begin to process it and make it be similar.
Right.
All right?
Right.
So if we, what is our image of the outer world? Maybe it's your picture of a landscape. But the actual outer world is the means of communication among humans. And so the level of sharedness among humans participating in an environment and how that relates to the personal interpretation of that. So the sociological, the collective interacting with the personal, that interface, that void, that gap where the metamorphosis takes place creates a general consensus.
Mm-hmm.
That's a mystery how that's done. But that cultural consensus is a meme. Now, that's been happening for thousands of years. And so what we know by culture and myth, ritual, and legend are memes. But when we get to the point now where we're digitizing and shrinking huge collective storehouses or mediums from the past, and they get tiny and modular being a repeatable unit, but tiny, once it gets to that point, than the mimetic function that humans have between their own personal making of sense and the collective making of sense becomes more autonomous. And so I call it the android mimetic faction, mimetic function, the android meme.
Okay, very good.
All right?
Right.
So the android meme is the past getting shrunk and confronted by your individual perception, which now swallows all the collectivities. So when you're on YouTube, you can look at every previous meme, every previous phase of the dram of cognition, collective and personal, and it is at the click of a mouse.
Now, who was James Joyce that he, I mean, who was he that he was able to write something like Finnegan's Wake?
No, that's a good question. One thing he had was a Jesuit training in Ireland. So he was well-versed in Thomas Aquinas. And Thomas Aquinas came up with maybe the most profound metaphysical intuition. And I'm not saying that as a Catholic. I'm not a Catholic. But he understood that the doubleness of human perception that I was just talking about means that you're never on one side or the other, but you're always translating the external into the inner and the inner into the external, and you're in the gap and in between. So therefore, the outer world is an expression and translation of the inner world, and the inner world is a translation of the outer world. It's like that phrase, I'm in this world but not of it. But without the bureaucratic religious meanings of it, just take it as metaphysical, this interplay of cognition translating the senses into each other, you are in the middle of that. That middle is not locatable. Now, that very process that Thomas Aquinas defined and laid out as a metaphysical philosophy was the theme that defeated the pagan culture at that time, 1200 or so A.D., and the Catholic Church is propped on that. But the Catholic Church is not aware of how Thomas Aquinas' perception was changed by print and then diminished by the 19th century industrial environment, but then retrieved by the electric environment. Because tactility, the nothing in between all the different media that television, telegraph, radio is, the characteristic of electricity, is an expression of that very metaphysical insight that Thomas Aquinas was trying to express. So we've externalized the tactility of human perception, and Joyce, having a background in Thomas Aquinas, goes to Europe where he's dealing with pagan culture, intellectual culture, radical culture, political culture, but none of them had the Thomas Aquinas background, but he was fortunate through his own experience to notice that it was in the movie and the radio and the telephone experience. So he translated that into a book form. And then McLuhan stood on that guy's shoulders and wrapped it all up and made a perfect summation of human knowledge. So what I read you was written by Marshall McLuhan, talking about Joyce's great discovery. McLuhan felt that Joyce made a way more significant discovery than Einstein or anybody else, or even the quantum mechanics, because Freud, Einstein, Heisenberg, the quantum mechanists, all of the, Picasso, who took out the connecting links in his painting and created cubism or multi-locational art, any of the developments in any of the arts were a product of the radio, movie, and telephone and automobile environment. Joyce saw the hidden ground of all those innovations in the arts and sciences. And McLuhan saw that Joyce had discovered that, and McLuhan applied it to his time.
And so when you read, when you try and read Finnegan's Wake, if it were to be represented as a geometric form, how many sides do you think there are? Because it's so dimensional.
Well, he called it the coach with the six sides. So if you believe what he wrote, and I don't recommend that, but there is a theme in the book revolving around the coach with the six sides. The reason I don't recommend you believe anything he wrote, because he made it determined that no one could edit and summarize and reduce to what's called the univocal, and say, this is what the book's about.
Yeah.
Because he was showing the interplay of tactility
right.
and its externalization in media.
Right.
So McLuhan used to quote Meister Eckhart, a mystic about 1400 A.D.,
yes.
who said once, only the hand that erases writes the true thing. So that's a good phrase to apply to thinning his wake, because the very nothing that I was telling you about earlier, where everything is canceled immediately, that is what our brains do in the interplay of all the data. And the tactile function in the brain that makes it coherent is in that state of in-between. The tactile function, if it could speak, would say, I'm in this body, but not of it.
Yes.
You follow me?
Yes.
So it's the miracle of looking at a mirror and realizing the mirror is as real as the image, but the whole reality is neither in the mirror or the image, because they translate each other constantly. You cannot know one thing through the other. And so the doubleness of our consciousness, our natural doubleness, you're aware that you're aware of something. That is a dialectical version of tactility, of this interplay. So the mirror shows you something that translates back into itself and then reflects back to the other.
Is this, now, because you have had such a long view through all of your work, and from and access to things that we, you know, couldn't know, evergreens and things to that effect, is where we are at this point, is this a natural evolution of our species?
Yeah, because we, on a simple level, we extended our external faculties, our hands, our feet, our muscles, with technologies, and then we extended our internal landscape, the systole, diastole of the heart, the blood flow of the central nervous system, the interplay of the neurons and synapses, all that's been extended. And then after we extended our body parts, we then extended the whole planet, which was the satellite. The satellite is a little program piece of nature. NASA had to make a simulation of the natural environment we live in. We had to take nature and put it in a little can and allow a human to live in it. So we actually created a mini little modular planet. So the final extension was the planet. So once that's done in the late 50s and early 60s, we then have to confront the mimetic effect of all that medium, all that past evolution. And what happened is it took on its own autonomous existence, which I call the Android meme, and we're stuck here experiencing it seducing us as it makes itself friendly and friendlier and disappears and shrinks and makes you feel that you run all the past, all the previous media.
On the lines, Bob Dobbs, author of Fata Communion, the man that inspired the Church of the Subgenius, and has brought back James Joyce's work and Marshall McLuhan's work and just Frank Zappa's work, and really has just expounded them into one big gob of goodness. So we continue with Bob Dobbs after this break and coming to further clarification and understanding. It's going to click for you guys, believe me. I mean, it's just really great once we get into the flow and how he starts to make this, make these connections, these bridges, to fill the gap as the gap comes and disappears at the same time. Hey, this is KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And so we're going to go to a quick break, get back with Bob. And so stay tuned, darlings. Okay.
Where the past and the future converge. Go to www.radioalchemy.com. RadioAlchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
And you know to go to www.kpfk.org and go to the programs. Go to Roy of Hollywood's program guide, and I'm down there somewhere on the Wednesday night, Thursday morning, political night, bada bing, 2 to 4, Radio Alchemy. You can find the website there. Working hard and furious. I'm sorry. I'm a working stiff. I'm working 7 days a week, you guys, and so it's, you know, I definitely need to do better in keeping the site updated and things like that. It's just, you know, the usual, you know, working like a dog kind of things. But hey, it's certainly an honor to be with you here, always trying to bring you the best and the brightest. And we have that gent online with us, Bob Dobbs. His website is www.fivebodied.com. FiveBodied.com. FiveBodied.com. You'll find tons of all of his writings, a discussion group, his tiny charts and big charts, and just everything you need to grapple and to get a hold of this concept of our of where we live and where we are and where we aren't. Hey, Bob, wanted to ask you.
Before you say that, Eben. Yeah. Just wanted to supplement what you just announced. If people go to Barnes & Noble, can see the new issue of Paranoia magazine.
Right, right.
And I'm on the cover of it. It says The Only Man Alive.
Yeah.
And the title of the article is Finnegan's Wake, Driving Your Five Bodies.
Oh, interesting.
So that's available on the stands now. And the other thing I wanted to say, when I was talking about the mirror interacting with the image,
yeah,
the reality.
Yeah.
What does it mean to say metaphor? A metaphor is sometimes defined as looking at one thing through another, right?
Yes.
Translating one thing through another. You mentioned bridge. The word metaphor comes from metapherine, which means to carry over. So to engage in the act of making metaphor is to bridge. Now, the interesting thing is that simple idea of a metaphor is translating one thing into another, looking at one situation through another. That encapsulates the whole process I was just telling you, and that the act of speech is interaction with another person so that you hear what you are translated through them.
Oh, interesting.
So in the end, when people say we're all metaphors, a metaphor is neither one side or the other. It's the interplay of the translation. It's the bridge, but it's not always a solid bridge.
Right.
It can be an acoustic bridge, a bridge of smell, or proprioception, or of kinesthesia.
Right.
And the bridge that interconnects, makes coherent all those bridges is tactility.
Wow.
And it has to be a super nothing to do that. But the nothing doesn't mean an empty void. You can see that we were talking how the Telegraph inspired Claude Bernard to think of interior medicine, because the Telegraph was in the beginning of the electric extension of the central nervous system, so the minds of the time started to look at our central nervous system.
Wow.
So we're at this point today where we have hyper-tactility and hyper-nothingness running our communication systems 24/7. So what becomes the new popular image in physics? Dark energy. You ever heard of that phrase?
Yes.
Dark energy. What's that? That's the empty void of tactility, a potent source of fusion energy. See, we're already living in the software extension of dark energy in our internet life.
Wow.
Our TV life.
That's good.
So the concepts that humans come up with, trying to fit it back into the past, fit it back into the metaphors from the past, is always one step behind. But looking at the present is a frightening thing.
Can you? But you can't see the present.
Yeah, that's right. That's like being dead.
Okay.
So back to your question.
Yeah, question. With our work with GLOW, okay?
Yeah.
And we had James, Marshall, and Frank there. I don't ever remember in that work James ever being a participant. He was always sitting by himself away, you know. Was that because of what he knew about communication?
That's a good point. I did many sessions with GLOW privately, and Joyce did do a little more, but he tended to hang back in the broadcast ones. But the when I talked to James Joyce through the Evergreens, now I don't know what I talked to. It was a spirit that claimed it was Joyce and was pretty knowledgeable about Joyce, right?
Right.
So I remain in the interval. I don't remain skeptical or positive about it. I remain in the interval.
Right.
It's irrelevant. It was an experience.
Right.
And James Joyce expressed through the Evergreens that he was disgusted with the electric environment. He thought it was a disaster for humans. He thought reading and writing were the most valuable activities. And so he was a stick in the mud, in a sense, about literacy. And so if there is any connection with that Joyce that came through the Evergreens and the Joyce that was around GLOW, I see it that he was rather indifferent to the whole process of being broadcast.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So that may be why he just stood back. Especially when we're on the radio.
Right, right, exactly, right. And so, yeah, he would be disgusted by that, absolutely. Oh, that's very interesting.
Yet it's interesting that the appreciation of the effects of the electric environment were discovered by McLuhan by reading the book that Joyce made, Finnegan's Wake, and studying the book. See, often, like any communication, what you intend is not what you get. It always flips into other kinds of effects because you are being translated by the collective medium. So what I'm saying tonight, in a sense, I have no interest in the interpretations of what I'm saying.
Right.
Because the hypersubjectivity that's a result of our time means very little likelihood of being able to match what I think I'm intending with what people need to get or intend to get from it.
You know what, tangent.
So I cancel what I've said so far on the show immediately.
Right.
And I'm ready to continue.
Good. Let me ask you this. We had a real short discussion before going on air, and you brought up Cindy Sheehan, right?
Yes.
Now, she went into a machine which she thought was the Democratic left, you know, movement.
Yeah.
Of righteousness and knowledge about what was going on. What did she enter into? How would you characterize what she went through?
I'd say she went into the TV body, which is iconography based on national politics, which is a red herring because television is a global environment and has destroyed every culture in the world, for good or ill. And so the content of every country's television is icons of that country's bureaucracy interacting with other nations' bureaucracies. So the White House is the central image of the TV body for Americans, and the battle over the White House is via these icons called the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And Cindy, what's her name? Cindy?
Yes, Cindy Sheehan.
Cindy Sheehan took that as something that could be manipulated or influenced to get some kind of productive outcome that stopped the imagery coming out of the Middle East, the TV news that were showing her and upsetting her, besides the fact that she lost a son. Mm-hmm. But she wanted to work through the TV body, and she's come to the point now where the Democratic image within that TV icon of United States politics has not translated its ostensible goals into hardware action and affect the war in the Middle East, and she's disgusted. So what is she going to do? She's going to go around and find another image, if she believes that the TV body has some substance. Or maybe she'll get on the Internet, form a website, try a third party. The point is, she's only worried and working with the effects of the TV body, and that will lead nowhere, and hence her disillusionment. Mm-hmm. If you think it's a medium that relates to other structures in the world, other paths, like the oil companies or the military-industrial armaments industry, if you think that they're going to rub up against each other, it's not going to happen because the world has been so fragmented. The parts of the media, the parts of the medium, which is the past, have been so scattered and flung within the chip body multiverse that they are just surviving and maintaining their own institutional integrity and not talking and attempting a coherency anymore. that's the product of a chip body. So she wrestled with the TV body and didn't know that the chip body was the reason her son was murdered.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. I'll have to mac on that for a little bit. We are,
it's the chip body.
Right.
Which is the nothing, hyper nothing, that is the world we live in.
Right.
Just think of all the emails you answer.
Yeah.
Just think of all the emails, once you've answered them, you forget. And you can retrieve them, but there's so many that you could retrieve that you ignore them.
Right, but they're still there.
They're still there. But what are they going to connect to? You've got more emails coming in tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you've got a garbage in and garbage out those.
Right.
Now think of the economy running like that. Trillions of dollars every 10 minutes popping up and then being canceled. So if you were responsible for managing this global theater, which is shrunk to the chip body, which is really a dark matter, dark energy, and constantly canceled, what would you do? You would not communicate. You would work with your little cabal, your little team, to maintain that you weren't blown up.
Right. You know what, Bob? We are, of course, flying and out of time at this time, but certainly the next time you come on, I want to talk about just that, the little cabals, the idea that maybe, you know how they have those, there was that fad going on for a while, I don't know if it still is, where people just send a text and all of a sudden these spontaneous mobs show up.
Yeah.
Right?
Flash mobbing.
Yeah, flash mobbing. You know, in a sense, it's just a little cue, and then people know to go into action. I want to maybe next time talk about flash mobs, talk about, like what you stated, that the things that are really being done aren't done with consensus anymore.
And I want to just end, if I got 30 seconds?
Yes, go ahead.
I mentioned creationism. Let's look at the strangest unidentified flying object today in the TV body, and that's the fundamentalist Christian American neocon movement, which has supposedly taken over the United States political structure.
Yes.
That is a reflex to the chip body, just as Darwin's image of the missing link and of biological organisms evolving was a product of the 19th century great chain of being encountering the gap. Nowadays, the reason creationism, 70% of Americans believe it over Darwinism, is that the chemical body that biology reinforced 100 years ago is a puny body. But if you're going to enhance a particular medium in relation to the TV body, you're going to pick the one that your country grew out of, and that's the book. And you're going to take one book, and you're going to make that your sacred icon. And that's why creationism wins today.
Because of the book.
That's right. That's the American meme gene, DNA.
Right.
The only country built on the book. Not the manuscript. Middle East built on the manuscript, the Quran. But we are built on the printed book. And that's the last vestige to protect yourself with a carapace or shield against the dark energy, the constant cancellation of dactility. Just as I'm going to be canceled in the next 10 seconds as you move on to the next show.
But you can be retrieved at the website. And that's the great thing, is that you are there immemorial. I mean, you are there forever.
And
eternally.
Remember, you need a lot of bad news to make good news acceptable. What's the good news? All the promises that advertising provides. That threatens your way of life. It says, buy this and get a new style. But is that the menacing promise? You need the emotion of survivorhood, or what's called the survivor emotion. So you get that by processing lots of bad news.
Oh, that's interesting.
The 20th century looks apocalyptic because we need a lot of bad news to feel good, because there's too much good news that makes us bad.
Okay, we're going to pick that up next time we come on. Because people are like, Bob, I want more good news that doesn't have to do with getting implants and taking penis, you know, functioning drugs and things like that. So,
well, the tactility, the nothing, as externalized today and then raped and plundered by the Android meme, is the good news. That's what I'm talking. Nothing but good news.
Okay, darling. Okay, we're going to pick that all up, plus the other good stuff, the next time you are on the lines, Bob Dobbs. The website, www.fivebodied.com, fivebodied, write it out, .com. And so, loves, oh my gosh, we're a little bit over time. So, until next week, please be with us for the fun drive. Please support us, help us to keep doing this, even in light of the LA Weekly article. Yes, don't worry, we're going to be taking care of things. You take care of us, and we'll take care of you. All right, until next week.
You've been listening to Radio Alchemy with your host, Evan Ray. Be sure to visit our website, www.radioalchemy.com, and join us next week for more mind-blowing revelations from the fringe.